across all three Monterey wells. Benzene is soluble in water. 2-ethylhexyl, a potential carcinogen in Monterey well number 50. It is slightly soluble in water. Benzoanthracene in Monterey well 15 and 16, not soluble in water. Benzofluoroanthine in Monterey well 15, also not soluble in water. In my 40-year employment in the oil industry, I've dealt with many hazardous chemicals. I'm a certified incident commander and a fire and hazardous material first responder for the last 15 years. I have not only responded to these incidents where hazardous chemicals were involved, I was the person in charge of these responses. I've dealt with the agency we speak of tonight, the Department of Environmental Protection, as well as many other agencies, U.S. Coast Guard, Environmental Protection, the New Jersey State Police Environmental Division, and the New York Department of Environmental Conservation. You may ask, how did I determine which of these chemical components were carcinogenic? There's an app called the Wireless Information System for Emergency Responders. WISER is the acronym, and it was created by the National Library of Medicine. This is the most referenced app used on the scene by hazmat and fire department responders to get information instantly for literally thousands of chemical compounds. You can download this app right now if you want, and if you do, start with benzene. In the handouts I just provided in figure two of the BSTI report, the trends of the benzene concentration results in Monterey well 2 and 16 have actually increased since November of 2016, the previous testing cycle. A slight decrease was seen in Monterey well 50. However, and this is very important, at 9 parts per billion, 11 parts per billion, and 23 parts per billion respectively, all three of these Monterey wells are thousands of percent over the groundwater quality criteria standard threshold of just 1 part per billion benzene. As I stated before, benzene is soluble in groundwater. It doesn't float on it. Benzene can also be present in other chemicals, volatile organic compounds that do float on the groundwater. In the BSTI report, trends of 2-ethylhexyl results in Monterey well 2 and 15 have decreased since November of 2016. However, those concentrations remain hundreds of percent over the groundwater quality criteria standard threshold of 3 parts per billion. I only spoke of the four most prevalent chemicals earlier. Other chemicals detected across all six Monterey wells on this sheet on September 4th were cyclohexane, a carcinogen not soluble in water, ethyl benzene, a possible carcinogen based on exposure. It's also not soluble in water. Isopropyl benzene or cumene, not soluble. Methyl cyclohexane, not soluble. Methyl tertiary butyl ether, called MTBE. That chemical was removed from motor gasoline after lab rats developed leukemia or lymphoma. It's not soluble in water. Toluene causes esophageal and rectal cancer, lymphoma, chromosome damage, but it's not soluble in water. Three different xylene components, all carcinogenics. Acenapine, a possible carcinogen. Fluorine, naphthalene, a possible carcinogen, and benzopyrene. While I've highlighted the worst chronic or long-term side effects, there are many other short-term or acute effects related to all of them, dizziness, confusion, headaches, et cetera, upon direct exposure to them, such as working in the deep, poorly ventilated excavations where concentrations may be high. Environmental experts would probably tell us that even though there has been no contaminated soil, environmental experts would probably tell us that even though there has been no contaminated soil removed, that These low parts per billion test results in the groundwater would rarely cause health problems to humans. In the environment understood and that natural attenuation would eventually clean up the groundwater. Mr. Denholz himself last meeting testified about the natural attenuation being performed. And maybe that is true in today's configuration at the McConnell property with zero soil disturbances, no digging, no grading, no sewer pipe or pump station installations. The very definition by the EPA states that physical means is a part of the attenuation process. Isn't the tidal effect twice a day, every day, influencing the water table of this property physical? And we have already determined that at least two of the hazardous materials certified as being present underneath this property are soluble in the groundwater. So where do we think this stuff is going? Once the site is regraded, foundations are dug, civil work for the utilities are completed, the deepest being the sewer lines and the pumping stations, it could potentially change the course or location of these existing contamination plumes, specifically the areas of concern with most of the chemicals, once the soil beneath is disturbed. Out of the 17 chemicals detected and reported by the LSRP, many being known carcinogens or possible carcinogens, does this planning board want to vote yes to a game of Russian roulette, potentially exposing future inhabitants of this 16-home community to those carcinogens? What is the liability to the town or to those on this planning board? This project is approved with known carcinogens and other hazardous chemicals in play if chronic health issues do arise in the future. The LSRP, Mr. Riston Smith, and the firm and BSTI's geologist, Mrs. Pierce Nimmerinder, the licensed experts have attested to the presence of these hazardous chemicals. And this board constantly coaches the public in these meetings, saying we, meaning the board and the public, must accept the word of the experts as 100% true. They wouldn't dare risk losing their licenses by telling us a lie, is what we're told. So the licensed experts have both attested to the validity of the sample results, proving the existence of carcinogenic chemicals in this report to the DEP in their report of October of last year. To the board members, a common sense rhetorical question. Would you let your kids or your grandkids move into and live in one of these new homes on top of active New Jersey remediation site number 004253 with known carcinogens and other detectable hazardous chemicals in the ground, not 20 feet below their new home? Personally, knowing these environmental facts, I sure as hell wouldn't. No one with any common sense would. These hazardous materials summary was not presented by the Denholz team to the public in any of these open hearings, another convenient omission by Denholz. McConnell Fuel Oil Company profited over the decades on this lot as its home base, even though zoned for residential use. Being a waterfront property and being used in a commercial capacity has elevated the purchase price, meaning that there has to be a certain amount of homes that must be put on the property to make the project profitable. But part of that cost must also be to properly remediate the sins underground as a result of those decades of McConnell profits. I assume that if this project is approved, Denholz will take over all or part of the responsibility for the LSRP effort and accept the remediation responsibilities from the current owner of the property. Knowing now the extent of the underground hazardous chemical contamination at the site, and if this project is approved, would the planning board mandate to the Denholz project, continuous air sampling during all excavation work to ensure the safety and health of the workers, the utility workers, the subcontractors at the site, as well as the local neighbors during those operations, until such time that all subsurface civil work has been completed? Could we make that part of the approval process?
When the board discusses it after public comment, it can be discussed, absolutely. At this point in time, it's your time to ask to make comments.
Can it be put on the docket for discussion?
We're taking notes.
Additionally, would the planning board, as a condition of approval, mandate in the real estate transactions with any new owners and any future owners of any home in this development that they are told the home being purchased is located atop an active New Jersey remediation site and supply the prospective purchasers with a copy of the most recent monitoring well sample analysis biennial report prior to any sale or resale of a dwelling on this site?
Again, once we have the discussion.
Will the planning board, as a condition of approval, mandate with all future biennial monitoring well test results, the reports, upon issuing reports, that a copy must be supplied to each homeowner of this development, either electronically or by paper version of their choosing, every 2 years until testing is no longer deemed necessary? Thank you. In closing, this project is vastly different from the one 3 designs ago. It's nothing like what Mr. Denholz promised to the Borough Council and all the residents in our town a little over a year ago. This project has become simply an incredible waterfront opportunity that Mr. Denholz loves, but it will just be 16 square boxes that Mr. Cassidy can sell to people once. That's all it is. If the project is approved, there is nothing about these 7 waterfront acres that we, the public, will be able to enjoy. Instead of enhancing the public good, this project will steal it away from us. There is a good chance that this project will come to a vote tonight or very soon. Your borough councilmen and women, fellow borough family members all, want public open space preserved. They're on the record saying so. And the hundreds of residents, again, family, that have participated in these special meetings want this open space in particular preserved for the public. If not completely and undisturbed, then at least the 1.5 acres that was previously designated, promised for public use after this development. And I know in my heart that the members of this planning board, even though you weren't allowed to answer the question, that you are all in favor of preserving public open space. Your votes have consequences. This vote, whenever it does occur, will define this board's legacy. Whatever the outcome of the final vote is, the results will be remembered every single time any one of your Atlantic Highlands family drives, bikes, runs, or walks Avenue D or Center Avenue past this parcel of land, or paddles or sails by on the bay. To the board, are you willing to vote your conscience for the good of your extended family? Or will you simply vote to approve this project only in the hopes of preventing possible litigation against the borough in the future? Honestly, I could care less what the borough lawyers say. The most recent monitoring well test results continue to provide significant reasonable doubt as to the status of the environmental conditions that remain underground at this site. The chemicals are there. Some areas are getting worse. Some chemicals stay in the groundwater. Most float on the water table. The LSRP, the environmental experts, and Mr. McConnell himself swore to the presence of these hazardous materials with their signatures on that DEP letter from BSTI. And as a result of these hazardous chemicals being present, the DEP has mandated testing of the monitoring wells at the McConnell site every 2 years until December of 2044, 25 years from now. So it all comes to this. Choose to ignore the potential long-term human health and safety aspect of knowing these hazardous chemicals are present just a few feet below those 16 square things with people living in them, or concede to the environmental reasonable doubt. This time, you have no choice but to vote no to deny approval of this application. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Pitt. Elizabeth Pomeroy. F. Chandler. Okay, sorry about that. Taylor McFarland. Mrs. Wigginton. Okay. We're actually going to leave it over there until we get through something. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Please raise your right hand and be sworn. Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I have a question about that. I am only going to state a comment. I'm not testifying to facts, so why would I have to be sworn in?
If this ever gets to a court and your statements are not under oath, the court's going to disregard us.
I'm going to repeat that. It seems like everybody here. If this ever gets to a court for some reason and your statements are not sworn in, the court will completely disregard them. So we require anyone making a comment to be sworn into the record.
So even if comments, not no statements.
Comments, statements.
I swear. That's where it's all true. Would you do that to make me? Ms. Strangleport?
No, absolutely not, Ms. Wigginton. In fact, I'd like everyone to hear everybody. Thank you.
I don't pretend to be a GDP expert, but I only know what I have seen from my eyes since the 1950s. I've watched the trucks being loaded. I watched the dead dust floating in the pond. And the only thing I have to rely on is Mr. Fisher's brilliant report. That I think it just justifies everything that I have always experienced since the 1950s. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wigginton. Mrs. Sheffrin. You're up. Happy birthday, too.
Please raise your right hand and be sworn. Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do, I swear.
And state your name and address, please.
Marilyn Sherman, 55 Avenue D in Atlanta. We have a treasure. And that treasure is an Apollo property. It's one that our family valued when we first moved to Atlantic Islands, kitty corner from McConnell's, over 40 years ago. And it's a place we still value today. Our kids grew up being able to walk down to the back beach, as they called it then, the fish, collect shells, wade in the water, and otherwise experience nature. All the kids in the neighborhood were able to play there. All the kids in the town were able to play there. And that's what I want for the future, all the kids of the future. With the development on the property, public access will be limited. Once that access is gone, we're not getting it back. But that's only part of it. There is the overwhelming historical significance of that area. Our Lenape ancestors, our English settlers and colonial legislature, the early merchants sailing from All Ains Landing, day trippers from New York in the 20s, even the rum runners saw the importance of this property. And there's the geology. The Friends of the Navesink Highlands and the Atlantic Highlands Environmental Commission of 2004 wrote of this unique area, which is unlike anywhere else in town. The mound is a rare outcropping of a geological layer 250 feet down. That holds the groundwater we drink from wells managed by the town. Then there's the significance of the public good. That vision in 2004 was for a waterfront promenade on this property. Quote, this would secure public access for recreation along the waterfront, including beach access at low tide, non-motorized boating, such as kayaks, and fishing from the upland, unquote. They also recognize the threatening of coastal development. The wetlands serve as a nursery for fish, a buffer against flooding, and a sponge to filter and clean water flowing to the bay. You know what is said about statistics? You can make them say whatever you want them to say, and that may be true for master plans. When the esteemed planner, Andy Jenner, testified for the developer, he extracted parts from the master plan to say why this development is exactly what the town wanted when the plan was written. He said, quite frankly, this is a plan that has been envisioned by the town and is being executed as envisioned by the community. I feel as though I weren't reading the same master plan. Again and again, the plan I read envisioned the need to restrain future housing development and to encourage the preservation of open space. For instance, the coastal waterfront design element of the section speaks to the desire to maintain and enhance public access to the beach. The need to develop and maintain the waterfront's potential for recreation and open spaces. Open space should be looked on as an element of public infrastructure and services that must be provided and maintained to sustain the community. Under the natural resources vision, the plan speaks to the desire to promote the conservation of desirable community features, restrain future development on scarce unbuilt land, and guide preservation, restoration, and redevelopment efforts. Or the goal for housing, limit future development and population density. Or with natural resources, protect natural resources such as creeks and banks, bay coast and beaches, steep slopes and swamp lock zones, forests and wetlands. Preserve and enhance the environment by maintaining existing buffers and establishing new buffers where necessary. The writers of the master plan hadn't experienced Superstorm Sandy, but they knew the value of a buffer. 16 houses isn't a buffer, it's a target. I could cite many other instances that speak to the vision for open space and the care of the wetlands, and even a specific desire for the McConnell property to be developed as such. It was an area that they saw could be used as a recreational area while protecting the coastal wetlands and minimizing the effects of stormwater. Recently, an article in the Two River Times speaks to the Navy's concern for waterfront conservation in the areas adjoining NWSRO. They recognize the value of undeveloped property at the water's edge as a protection for the base and for the coastline itself. And so I'm asking you on the planning board to vote no on this housing development. As you deliberate, think of those who have come before you and those who have come after. The law, the plan, is there to back you up. Let's not squander this treasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Board, for hearing our comments.
Sir, raise your right hand. Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And name and address.
Brent Sonic House, 51 Ocean Boulevard, Atlantic Highlands. So I said, thank you, Board, for listening to all our comments and considering them during your discussion of this application and making the right decision. I have 2 points to discuss here. The first point is discussion of Ordinance 07-2013, which revises Section 15084, Paragraph 83, which is the General Site Design Standards. Now, the Ordinance 07-2013 was passed in the aftermath of Superstorm Sandy. It caused unimaginable devastation to our town. We've all experienced, we all went through it. And I'd like to read from the ordinance, but also like to thank Councilman Fleeger for his hard work and vision in passing that ordinance that's designed to protect our health and community welfare, and also protect our residents from future devastation from additional storms, which we all expect. Now, first up, I'm going to read a few whereases and then a key component of the ordinance. First, whereas number 5, Whereas, as a result of Superstorm Sandy, which occurred on October 29, 2012 and October 30, 2012, a substantial number of properties within the borough were adversely impacted, experiencing damage and/or destruction requiring the restoration or reconstruction of buildings and structures on such properties. And whereas, in response to Superstorm Sandy, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has developed new advisory base flood elevation maps to reflect new flood levels sustained during the storm surge of Superstorm Sandy, which maps have now been adopted as emergency regulations, as is the rebuilding standard for the entire state, in order to provide families, businesses, communities with the best assessment of risk in order to prevent, to better mitigate damage from future storm and flooding events, avoid higher flood insurance costs, and begin the rebuilding process. And whereas the Borough of Atlantic Highlands has determined that it is appropriate to give recognition of these regulations, which may require structures to be raised above the present elevations in order to comply with new regulatory requirements, and further finding that these regulations will impact upon the height of structures being reconstructed or newly constructed in the affected flood areas, and it being appropriate to respond by amending the development regulations to reflect new flood levels sustained during the storm surge of Superstorm Sandy and the implementation of the new ABFD maps and or the permanent successors. Now, according to the amendment to section 15084, paragraph A3, is as follows. And I'm going to start with the beginning of the 15084. Open space historic structures. In subdivision and site design, the following areas shall be preserved as undeveloped open space, or in the case of historic structures, maintained within the development. 1. Wetlands. 2. Significant trees. 3. Lands, and this section 3 is what was added in this ordinance. Lands in the floodway were identified as B and A zones on the advisory based flood elevation map. What this states is those lands should be retained as open space. Now, in looking at this and looking at the record, I don't see what happened here. And this ordinance was created for a reason. We want to limit the devastation and suffering that future storms such as Sandy can wreak on our community. It should not be ignored, discarded, or considered a meaningless design waiver. Even the DOD, as just was mentioned, considers potential sea level rise to impact Earl to the level of 7.5 feet over the next 50 years. We have a serious problem. And here we have the development of 9 lots in a flood zone, including several houses that are in that flood zone. Contrary to what we want as through this ordinance that was promulgated with the help of Councilman Fleeger. So I don't know what happened here. And I think hopefully the planning board can take this up in their own discussion. Where was the board engineer's review of this ordinance? Was it just ignored? Why? Or was the old ordinance improperly applied? Potentially it was consideration of an older ordinance than this one here. Either way, we as the public deserve an answer and an understanding of what happened with this particular waiver of this design standard. If there was one at all, nor should there ever be. So either way, we deserve an answer. And this ordinance would allow this development to be considered non-compliant, and it should be rejected. Issue 2, I'm going to go lay out here why the application has not addressed the pump station's installation correctly and why you as a board should reject it. First, according to the ordinance, let's look at section 150 attachment 3, which I have here, which I don't think has been shown, and even submitted to evidence if they want.
I'm sorry, I was taking notes on what you're saying.
Sure thing. This is developmental regulations, the attacher. In here it says public utilities. If you look to the tag space, that public utilities shall be conditional use in the R1 zone. Right? Right here we have what is apparent, a utility, a pump station. So I don't know why it doesn't seem like it's been applied as a conditional use according to this, which is in the ordinance. Now, let's look, and since there's no waiver, it's not exempt, it should be not exempt from any approval of conditional use. Let's look at 15036, public utilities. Public utility uses such as water towers, pump stations, electrical substations, radio towers, transmission lines, switching stations, which must be provided above ground, may be permitted as a conditional use in those zones specified, provided that the use and or structures shall adhere to the minimum standards of the particular zone and following. A, a statement is submitted setting forth the reasons for the proposed installation must be provided above ground in a specific location and why it is necessary and convenient for the efficiency of the public utility system or for the satisfactory and convenient provision of service by the utility to the neighborhood or area in which the particular use is to be located. B, the design of any buildings in connection with such facility conforms to the general character of the area and will not adversely affect the safe and comfortable enjoyment of property rights of the zone in which it is located. C, adequate and attractive fences and other safety devices will be provided. Fences, when used to enclose public utility facilities, such as electrical power substations, shall be built in accordance with the requirements of the NJBPU Commissioners and the New Jersey Uniform Construction Code. D, sufficient landscaping, including shrubs, trees, lawns, are provided and will be periodically maintained. The public utility use and lot shall not meet all the applicable minimum requirements additions located, except that it the public utility use and lot shall meet all the applicable minimum requirements of the district in which it is located, except that it need not have the minimum required lot area. Only one principal building will be permitted on a lot, and a paved parking area is required. Now, I know in the testimony it's been considered that it meets these criteria. I don't think that, from what I can see, there has not been a statement submitting for the reasons that the proposed installation must be provided above ground. Is this above ground? Yes, it is. Yeah, we have a pump station, but there's significant structures above, as noted in the testimony, which I'll get into in a moment. Second, does the building, in connection with the form of the general character of the area, doesn't appear that it does here as well. Three, is there parking? Assume that the small road that goes over to a proposed easement across borough property could be considered parking. But do we know that the borough is going to grant that easement? We do not. Is there a secondary easement? I believe there's a secondary easement between two houses that are contiguous. Will the paving of that easement result in loss of impervious lot coverage for those two lots? I think these are all considerations that have to be considered before this is approved. Going through section this, clearly it states that for conditional use to does apply, the utility must meet that following. It doesn't have, as I said, it doesn't have the statement. Design building, paved parking area are all major issues. Now, there also has been discussion that is non-applicable, and that's in section 150.55, non-applicability to underground utilities and essential services. It says, the provisions of this chapter shall not apply to customary underground essential services as herein defined, except that all facilities such as pumping stations, repeater stations, and electrical substations which require a building above ground, or any other above ground appurtenance of any type more than 40 feet high, shall require approval as conditional use subject to the provisions of the chapter. Now, where we get into there is the important question, is this a building? Now, we have a lot of testimony on November 27th to this effect. The testimony is from Susan Bracefield, who was the designer of this pump station. And here she says, this is on page 43 of the transcript. Question from Mr. Junko. So could you briefly describe the proposed pump station, and then I'd like to address the potential impacts in terms of sound, odors, etc. Yes, the sanitary pump station will consist of two below-grade chambers. One is a pump station wet well, and the second is a valve changer. Above grade, there will be an emergency generator and two electrical panels. One of the questions is, in the engineer's review letter, was the height of the above-grade structures. So we admit that this is above grade. There are things that are important for that pump station above grade. It is not completely underground. The above grade electrical panels, one will be 5.5 feet above, the top of it will be 5.5 feet above grade, the second one will be 6 feet above grade. So the entire pump station property will be fenced in with a lock and key so no one can access that. The electrical panels will be aluminum structures that are locked and only the pump station operators can access those electrical panels. Now, in the second question, she answers, one of the changes that we made from what we had originally talked about was the wet well would be more rigid and less likely to cause any noise from vibrations. Also, we put in the highest And we also put in the highest, we have designed the highest level of enclosure for the generator to contain the noise and lower the impact of the adjacent properties. Now, further, to a question from Dr. Citron. The access to the chamber, is it going to be fixed or will it be put in place when they need to go down into the chamber both for normal maintenance and extra maintenance? This breakthrough. Part of the chamber has an access hatch that can be opened up and there will be hoist that will be portable. So they'll put the hoist up when they need to access it, and they'll store it either in probably in the trunk or in another facility. So there's access panels. It's not just an open box. Now later on, important point, Mr. Stive asked a question. Mr. Junko, can I ask you a couple of questions of your witness? The structures consisting of this pumping station, there is no building with a roof. Is there or is there not? Mr. Junko, I think the question can best be answered by Ms. Bracefield. Now, Ms. Bracefield says, there is no building, but there is a roof. So now let's look at the definitions. I think the key is the definitions here. One, let's look at the definition of a building. Definition of a building, a combination of materials to form a construction, having a roof, and adapted to permanent, temporary, or continuous occupancy. There's a few words in here that we have to define further. First one is construction. Now the definition of construction is any work, disturbance, or other act associated with the creation, improvement, or work on or for the benefit of any structure, permanent improvement, environmental control measure, or action required to achieve the goal of this chapter. Clearly, this is a pump station that is achieve the goal of this chapter. Second question we have to answer is what, is a roof. Now, roof is not explicitly defined. There are some components of a roof that are defined, but not in and of itself. Talk about a roof assembly, a system to provide weather protection and a resistance to design loads. This system consists of a roof covering, roof deck, or a single component serving as both a roof covering and a roof deck. The roof assembly includes the roof deck, vapor retarder, substrate, or thermal covering, battery, insulation, all of this stuff. It all goes into a roof. But then the question is occupancy. Occupancy definition is the specific purpose for which land or building is used, designed, or maintained. Clear, this is a building with a roof, per the testimony of Ms. Bracefield, and it has an occupancy, which is that electrical material that serves the pump station itself. At no point has it been clear that we do not have a building. And if we do not have a building, clearly from the testimony and from the ordinance, we only have three options. One, the building is necessary for a conditional use application. There was none made. And that would have to be rectified if that's the case. Two, the building is necessary for a D variance application if it does not meet all five criteria of the conditional use application, since there was no application for D variance, and this is also the improper venue, that's for the zoning board. Or three, the building must comply with all the regulations for an R1 district and must be residential if a primary structure, which it is not. It does not meet that requirement. Therefore, we look at this, and this application should be denied based on that pump station and its in the applicant's failure to submit the proper paperwork and proper applications to either met a conditional use for the D variance or that it's properly within the R1 structure. So again, based on my two issues, I ask you to consider them closely, to look at the ordinance as written and why it was not applied here, which it should be, and two, to consider that pump station and how it affects this application in a negative way. And also in regard to that pump station, with open space, it's important to note that they were very, very tight in open space, and from my understanding of their calculation, the interior inside that fence and the road falls within their open space calculation. It should not. If you read the definition of open space, which I have here as well, any parcel or area of land or water essentially unimproved and set aside, dedicated, or designated, or reserved for public or private use or enjoyment, or for the use and enjoyment of owners and occupants of land adjoining or neighboring such open space, provided that such areas may be improved with only those buildings, structures, and streets and other improvements that are designed to be incidental to the natural openness of the land. A pump station and an access road do not meet that definition, and it needs to be excluded from any calculation of open space. Thank you very much.
Ms. Santry. I don't see Ms. Santry. Mr. Kraus.
Do you raise your right hand to be sworn to either swear or affirm that any testimony given in connection with this proceeding be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And name and address.
James Kraus, K-R-A-U-S-S, 77 Bayside Drive, and also chair of the Atlantic Highlands Environmental Commission. I'm here on behalf of the Environmental Commission and also have some personal comments. I'll start with the Environmental Commission comments. The Environmental Commission passed a resolution recommending the acquisition of the McConnell property for the purposes of creating a public park. The vote was 6 in favor, none opposed, and one abstention. The planning board member of the Environmental Commission recused himself. The resolution makes reference to excerpts from the master plan. I'm not going to read the resolution, but I am going to read the excerpts from the master plan referred to in the resolution. I want you to keep two things in mind. First, the applicant's planner testified that the applicant's proposed development was in accordance with the master plan. This claim is misleading and perhaps specious. The master plan excerpts, which I will read, are from the principles, objectives, assumptions, and policies, which should be viewed as overarching. The planner did not comment on this overarching portion of the master plan. Second, what I will read is in the current master plan, but it's also word for word in the draft plan that the current planning board, you folks, presented to the public recently. This is from the principles, objectives, assumptions, and policy section of the current plan. Objective number 4, to encourage bayfront open space and recreational activities, adequate public services for beach use, hiking, and boating, as well as improved commercial facilities. Objective number 5, to establish new and upgrade existing municipal recreational facilities, including ball fields, trails for biking and hiking, beaches, and Lenape Woods Nature Preserve. Objective number 7, to protect areas with scenic, cultural, and recreational value, particularly along the waterfront, stream corridors, the Ocean Boulevard Scenic Route, and other scenic roadways, streetscapes, and historic districts, and hilly woodlands. Objective number 8, to promote a desirable visual environment in terms of open space and recreation lands, stream corridors, the bayfront, the marina, scenic roadways, landscaping buildings, and infrastructure. And objective number 10, to provide sufficient space and appropriate locations for commercial, residential, light industrial, and open space and recreational uses. Our conclusion on the Environmental Commission is that residential development of this property is clearly not consistent with the spirit or intent of the current master plan, nor the draft plan the current planning board has presented to the public. And with that, I'll shift to my personal comments. First, and this is a little bit off script, but I believe that having just presented the public with a draft plan that has exactly the same objectives as the ones that I read from the old plan, that the board does believe in open space. In conjunction with my duties on the Environmental Commission, I have read the entire draft plan. There are a couple things that I'd like to point out. There were three occasions that related to housing development. Roman numeral 4-2 calls for restraining additional housing development. Roman numeral 7-2 calls for limiting development and population density. Roman numeral 8-3 calls for limiting future residential development. Nowhere did I see anything that said we need more development in our single-family zones. And as Mrs. Sherfman just pointed out, there are many sections throughout the draft plan, well, she spoke of the current plan, but also in the draft plan, many sections calling for open space. The draft plan also has increased focus on flood issues, which is a very good thing. Therefore, I ask, in an age of rising sea level, increasing storm intensity, increasing flooding, and the fact that the New Jersey coastal plain is actually subsiding, we should not be building more homes on the waterfront and putting more people and property at risk. I urge you to deny this application. And I would like to enter into the record the copies of the Environmental Commission resolution.
Please, Mr. Cross. Thank you, sir.
We'll mark it as the cross-examination. It is the Atlantic Islands Environmental Commission Resolution 2018-01 in support of acquisition of McConnell Tract as open space.
Thank you.
And please excuse me with this pronunciation, but Douglas Leite, L-E-I-T-E. Okay. Luke Kane, Judy Kane, Benson Childs,
please raise your right hand and be sworn. Do you swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And name of address.
My name is Benson Childs, B-E-N-S-O-N-C-H-I-L-E-S. My address is 59 3rd Avenue in Atlantic Islands. I'm here tonight on my own behalf. I want to begin by thanking members of the Planning Board for your patience in this process. I know firsthand how time-consuming it can be to participate in applications like this one, and I value time at home with my family and with my friends, and so I thank you for taking your time to do this important work. When I was sitting in your position 12 years ago, when the Hovnanian subdivision application came before this board for the same property, we spent month after month after month going through similar hearings before the application was eventually withdrawn. And I know in general your applications are of a different nature, and some of those can be difficult too, because you have to say no to neighbors for seeking variance relief, and it often feels like a lose-lose situation. But of course, when applications come like this one that are much larger, and the passions of the community are stirred, I remember feeling as though sometimes my hands were tied, because I knew the courts would care more about my sticking to the borough ordinance than they would care about public sentiment. And I think you probably feel that too. I want to acknowledge Mr. Denholz and thank him for his willingness to participate in dialogue about how to provide a project that will be welcomed in our community. There was really no way he could have known when he moved forward with this application how deeply the community cares about this parcel of land and protecting waterfront for public use. As a developer myself, albeit a small one, I've had my share of setbacks, including one here in Atlantic Highlands when a project fell through due to technicalities imposed by this board. So I understand the challenges that he faces. At the same time, the latest plan that we're looking at tonight is a step backwards from the original plan that I think all of us appreciated for its commitment to public access and open space. And furthermore, this plan has construction in the flood zone and an awkward, insufficient layout of common open space that'll be of no real benefit to the community. Now, obviously, this is not the first subdivision application for this property, and it may not be the last application. It is, however, the least dense that this board has seen, and that is exactly the way it should be. Overwhelmingly, our residents have spoken in favor of open space, waterfront access, and recreational opportunities, prioritizing quality of life in Atlantic Highlands over dense new development. This sentiment is reflected in our master plan and elsewhere, as a number of people pointed out tonight, including in the recent county open space referendum, which passed with a strong majority in 2017. It's also worth noting that over time, communities and their priorities change. When Standard Oil first proposed using this land as an oil transfer station, as an example, the idea was met with approval by the borough council. It is impossible to imagine that happening today. And past planning boards have approved developments that this board would never consider in 2019. As you all know well, that's one reason we have local planning bodies, which are granted the responsibility of periodically updating a community's master plan to account for changing community needs. Of course, since 2006, the last time we had a subdivision application for this property, a lot has changed. Most relevantly, our community suffered from Superstorm Sandy, which was, of course, one of the most devastating events in modern New Jersey history. And that's why the Borough Council went through the trouble of updating the zoning ordinance that was discussed by an earlier commenter to clarify that all lands in the flood zone should be preserved as open space. Unfortunately, the latest plan proposes not only to subdivide lots in the flood zone, but also to build two houses and pave a portion of a road. In my view, this violates the ordinance and is insensitive to the recent history of our town. So even though this plan is less dense than previous plans, it is still too dense. And even though some accommodation has been made to meet the requirements of the zone, in my view, the plan is unresponsive to community input and should be rejected. And just one final thought, as I was thinking about whether I would comment or not, I was reflecting on some of the decisions that I made when I was a board member, and I realized that I never regretted voting no on an application. The only regrets I had in my time on the board were the times that I voted yes, were times when I voted yes. So anyway, with that, I want to thank you again for your time and effort and for your commitment to this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Adele, you're up. You came in a little late. We're going from past ones. Okay, thank you. Ms. Klerfeld.
Andrea Klerfeld, 41 3rd Avenue, Atlantic Highlands.
Do you just
spell my name?
Please.
A-N-D-R-E-A-C-L-U-R-F is in French, E-L-D as in David.
And do you swear affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Go ahead.
That's the only time I've ever said I do in my life. everyone just spoke so eloquently and with so much information, such passion. You know, hard to come after all these people with such great information, but I think we're all on the same page about what I'm about to say too, and that is that preventing the privatization of the Atlantic Highlands waterfront is the responsibility of every resident of Atlantic Highlands, be they homeowner or renter, be they elected or appointed public servant. Privatizing the Atlantic Highlands waterfront is a violation of Atlantic Highlands' character, our collective sense of community, our privilege as caretakers of the precious natural resource that is our Earth's water. We are, all of us, stewards of this resource. And just as we seek to preserve this fragile parcel, this particular 7-acre parcel of waterfront in as natural a state as possible, we also seek to protect it from further harm, and that is man-made harm. It's smart in every way, environmentally for certain, as a way of preserving the charm and the character of Atlantic Highlands, absolutely. As a safeguard of our property values, definitely. Members of the Atlantic Highlands Planning Board have the vote on this proposal. But we, the borough's residents, have the right and also the responsibility to raise our voices in public discourse. Sadly, there were members of the Planning Board who sought to stifle the public during prior hearings, and there are those who seem to have sidestepped their duty of watching out for Atlantic Highlands and point to officials elsewhere. You know, as we were having hearings and there were so many questions raised, and they pointed to officials elsewhere as having the responsibility to ask informed, pertinent questions. And two members of the Planning Board who have, during this process, stated that they are only volunteers. They called out members of the public, particularly women, including me, for attempting to ask questions and express concerns as citizens of a democracy. Well, to those Planning Board members, I ask you to consider the privilege of public service. If you cannot hear out residents in this setting, if you do not have the patience for the public processes of a democracy, recognize that your commitment is lacking. But recognize as well, please, that the commitment of Neighbors for Waterfront Preservation is not lacking. And know that we will not stand silent and allow our waterfront and our public processes to be privatized. Thank you all very much for listening to me this evening.
Thank you, Ms. Perfect. Paul Hancock. No, that's not it. John Smythe, Emily Rathburn, Carolyn Northrup, I don't see her, John and Ginger, they signed up together, Lalos, Lauren McCann, nope, Lauren, she signed up here, yeah. just give me one second, only because she is signed here. So I do see you a little further on.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, but maybe that's an old one.
It's an old one. Yes. Okay. Yes. Elaine Egidio. Thank you. Sorry, it's the big swirl.
Anyway, we need to swear first. You swear affirmed that any testimony you in connection with this proceeding being the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes, I did.
And your name and address.
My name is Elaine Egidio, E-G-I-D-I-O. My address is 81 West Highland Avenue. And I want to first of all say that I'm a third generation resident of Atlantic Highlands. My father's people came here from Italy.
and my father, as some of you might know, served this community. And I went away and came back and lived here a number of years. My parents used the beachfront, I used the beachfront, and my children did. And I would love to see this area that we have, because it is a jewel, as it's been said. As a matter of fact, Chamber of Commerce at one time had the jewel of Monmouth County, the jewel of New Jersey, as that described us in the Atlantic Highlands. I've hosted people from North and South America, as well as Europe, who have gone down to the beachfront and just were amazed. Here we could stand in New Jersey and see New York City and the beautiful water, which we fought so hard to have it become beautiful water. Because maybe, well, you were all probably too young, but there was a time when our water was extremely polluted. I believe that with the building, as well as the landscaping that's going to be involved in making these homes, someone set up boxes, I will not sing the Pete Seeger song, that with all of that building, all of that is going to disturb not only what's already been told of all the chemicals, but just building in itself has pollution. And then you're going to have landscaping. We know what's going to happen. We all know what's going to happen when pesticides end up in our waters. I ask you, please don't let that happen to our town. Please, for our generation and all the generations to come. I thank the builder for wanting to come to our town. He said to me in the hallway, this is a beautiful town. It is a beautiful town. And I don't think it's going to be enhanced by 16 homes that look alike and is the homeowners association with their own rules. So even if something got changed that we could have public access, the homeowners association, we know what happens. But at least I do. I've had many friends who've lived in them and rules get changed. We need open space. Our environment needs open space. Our reputation as the jewel of New Jersey needs open space. We need the beauty. Also, the last time we were here, I had asked questions about the roadways. I used to commute to the other side of New Jersey, and every time they put in a development, the roads got worse and worse. 16 homes with 4 cars apiece with what we already have going on our roads. I walk my dogs. I walk myself. Our roads get a little congested. Are our roads going to be able to handle that? I don't think so. I don't think so. So I don't have all of the wonderful information that so many of those who came before me said. All I can say is I've been a citizen of this town. And I'm asking you to please, and once again, I do thank the builder. You're right, this is a very unique town. And I ask that we keep it a unique town. I really ask that we do that. And I ask you, the board, to please vote no. And I thank you very much as well, part of the same community and the same family. Thank you.
Corey W. of 7A Harborview Drive. No. Don Adler. Casey Espina. Donna MacDonald. Mary MacDonald. Well. Oh, that's Stephanie Ladiana. Eric Valentine. Chris Nolan. Paul Barbado. Thomas King. Tony Hannon.
Raise your right hand and be sworn to you this court affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding would be the truth, all truth, nothing but the truth.
Yes, I do.
And state your name and address.
Tony Hannon, 1 Brantway, Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. I'm a member of the Catamaran Club. I'm from this area for my whole life. I read the entire draft master plan, and it's obvious that you, the authors of the plan, are against this housing development. Throughout the entire master plan, you talk about preserving waterfront open space and increasing recreation activities. You even talk about this property specifically in Chapter 12, page 6. Center Avenue Park should be extended eastward along the beach as far as Avenue D in order to increase the public recreational use of the bayfront. As we all know, Center Avenue is on the left of the property and Avenue D is on the right. So now Center Avenue Park is the Catamaran Club that resides on. Let me read a few more of your statements from the master plan. Chapter 4, page 7, the borough should take all necessary steps to acquire the remaining tracts of Bayshore property. Chapter 7, page 2, the borough should encourage bayfront open space and recreational activities to protect areas of scenic and recreational value, particularly along the waterfront. Chapter 11, page 2, future development must respect the public interest in maintaining and enhancing the waterfront as a community resource. And last of my statements, there's many in the master plan. Chapter 12, page 1, the town's small area is almost fully built out and densely populated. The movement to protect remaining open space derives from this basic geography and demography. It also springs from the increased demand for active recreation by children, youth, and adults, which outstrips available facilities. So approving this housing development would be a direct contradiction to your own master plan. If honoring your own words in the master plan is enough for you to reject this application, let me raise another issue. In 100 or more years, sea level rise will permanently flood much of the current Center Avenue Park. However, the Jason McConnell tract, the property under consideration, because of its elevation, will survive. If you want future generations to enjoy a waterfront park at this end of town, then you should extend the park across the McConnell tract as a state in the master plan. That could become the new park. 100 years or 150 years. Finally, if the borough and other local governments cannot afford to follow your plan to acquire this property and extend the park across it, then here are two alternatives, two suggestions that I'm recommending. First alternative, rezone Fireman's Field to residential housing, sell it to the developer and use the proceeds.
Mr. Hannon, as per the opening statement, we may consider comments in reference to this application, I'm sorry, but not ideas for other things that can be done. So
no, this is related to this. You could use the proceeds. You'd move on, but basically saying move Fireman's Field to the contract.
Again, sir, that's not relevant. What happens with Fireman's Field is not relevant with this application. I'm just saying we want to concentrate on this track.
I'm trying to say if you can.
And I'm telling you what we can talk and not talk about. Thank you. All right, please keep it on this, okay? The borough does not own Fireman's Field. Please, okay?
Well, there's some kind of relationship you could establish there. A park, a ball field on the water would be nicer than an inland ball field, plus it has other, more utility. Another alternative, rezone this McConnell track as a waterfront business and sell to the developer to build a beach club like those in Seabright where users pay instead of taxpayers. This way you don't have to foot the bill. This is still a much better use of this waterfront property than housing. Many more families and 16 households will be able to enjoy it. So in conclusion, because we will eventually lose the adjacent park to sea level rise, and because the best use of this last remaining open space in the waterfront is certainly not housing, and because there are feasible ways to finance recreation use of this property, and finally because you should honor your own master plan, otherwise it's meaningless, I implore you to reject this housing application.
Thank you, Mr. Rank. Ladies and gentlemen, we are an hour and a half in. We're going to take a 7-minute break for people to use the bathroom and stretch their legs. All right, we will return here at 8 minutes after 9. All right.